Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes, yes.
How you doing this week, my darling?
I'm good. I'm like trying to figure out who the weather is and what she's trying to tell me because
who the weather
she's
is.
Inconsistent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's like, I just, so side note, I got a friend of mine got me some plants from like a very she-she place where it's self-watering.
Because so you're she-she. Yeah.
I am pretty she-she bougie, but So it's self-watering. So when you get them, they have this reservoir that it's, but they tell you wait till the soil is completely dry. So I felt, I was like, and it's already like the leaves are like turning yellow. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And then I realized I didn't fill it all the way up because the pots are really, really small. But then also it did say that some leaves may fall off because it's getting acclimated to the new environment.
So you're telling me that you're killing a self-watering plant. That's what I'm getting from this.
I deserve it. I had a friend in college once that she went away for like a semester and I kept her cactus.
Oh,
I killed her cactus.
Well,
she came back. She's like, Lavetta, how could you kill a cactus? I was like, I'm sorry. I think I overwatered it. Like, I get very like, I even overwater or underwater. And like, so I'm hoping. And then last night it hit me like at midnight. I was like, oh, maybe I'm supposed to fill it up all the way. So I went around and I filled it up all the way. But then also you have to be careful with what kind of water you use.
What?
So if you use tap water, yes, if you use tap water, you have to let it sit for 24 hours for any of the chlorine or anything that's in the water that the water's treated
God.
With. Because that can affect the flowers, the plants. And so like, yeah, so I'm stressed out about that. And I'm like, I'm supposed, plants are supposed to be soothing. And so like, I'm going through a lot.
Calming down.
A lot. Like, it's just, yeah, I'm just ready. I need to go to sleep. I just need to go to sleep and sleep for like 12 hours a day for like the next week. And I think I'll be good. So
only you are going to get further stressed out by a gift of self-watering plants. Okay.
It's a problem. It's a problem. Yeah. When did I become this person? I blame the pandemic. Pandemic broke me. I'm just going to say.
Listen, it broke us all though.
Yeah.
Okay.
It broke
You're in
me,
good
but-
company.
Well, on that note, we should get to maybe some broken women. I don't know.
I don't
maybe.
Know.
I believe.
Well, I know.
Let me just double check. I believe you're first this week.
I don't know
yes,
anything.
Yes, you are first this week. Okay. Who is your notorious woman? Hopefully she could be an inspiration for me because I need it.
Yes, she can. Okay. So, have you ever heard... of an artist named Linda Martell?
Yes.
Okay, because she's like in the zeitgeist right now because I like the word zeitgeist. It makes me sound smart. Okay. It was definitely an SAT word that I've known since I've studied for my SATs.
Not an Here SAT
I am
word.
Bragging like I'm smart. Okay. Because like I'll just like cut to the chase if you've listened to Beyonce's new album, which thank you to the Apple Music charts. I know you have, right? I'm talking to everybody in the world. Cool. Great. Like, listen, the newest album is, I've been baking a lot because like
you love
Easter
your baking.
And then I'm prepping Passover. It's the best like baking soundtrack. I know that's weird.
Well, it's kind of it's cozy because it feels like a cozy album too. So it's very cozy.
Come on, man. Okay. And then every so often my kids walk in the kitchen at the wrong time, but that's fine. They're fine. They'll learn.
They will.
Okay. So let's talk about her. Linda Martell, born with the name Thelma Bynum on June 4th, 1941. She was one of five children. Parents were Clarence and Willie May. I love a Willie May.
This is a country woman.
Yes.
Her last name is Bynum and her parents' name, Willie May.
Willie May.
Willie May.
From Leesville, South Carolina. I'm from the South. We were doing Southern accents the other day and my children told me that my Southern accent was not very good. and I might have cried a little. Listen, I'm not, Southern.
Not the babies. Oh, but shading you. Oh, my yes. God. Not. Oh, that hurts yes. when the babies are like, don't do that.
Yeah, Mom, stop. Like, how dare you, child? You get here right now and you listen to me. And they're like, Mom,
don't
stop.
Do it. I'm telling you, always do foghorn leghorn. Works every time.
Ho, ho. No.
I'll say.
All right, I'll stop. No okay. one wants to hear me do that. But you're funny. I'm just awkward and sad. So her father was a sharecropper, and her mother worked many hours in a chicken slaughterhouse. So oof. Five kids, sharecropping, slaughterhousing, not easy.
Now, when was she born again?
1941.
And her father was still a sharecropper?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Reparations now, y'all. Listen, because sharecropping is basically another form of slavery.
It
if
is.
People don't know. Look it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing that people are like, oh, well, we're past that. Are we? Because it's 1941 and her father's a sharecropper. Because
wow.
like, yeah.
And that's hard. It's hard life.
It's a really hard life. So she was a little girl. She was real smart. And she was like, sharecropping does not look fun. So she learned how to cook at the age of 7. So she made dinner. Right.
Yeah, the little hands. Oh, know, the little right? pretty baby cooking. Oh,
good girl.
She meanwhile, probably had to have a little stool to get up on the stove and like.
It's such a different world. My kids are like, can I cook eggs by myself? Absolutely not. You'll burn
oh, no.
everything.
These kids nowadays would not survive in the wilderness nope. of 1940s.
No.
At all.
But that's our fault. It's 100% my
it's
fault.
It's a good thing because kids should not be cooking dinner at 7, right. but it's just, yeah, these kids, ooh, these some soft kids here. Like, they're even softer than the kids from the 90s. Listen.
My husband calls them marshmallows all the time. Marshmallows.
They just, it's like our pets, like our pampered pets. Like, oh yeah. Yeah, you not.
Yeah, don't send them out. Don't even send them in the backyard. They can't handle it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So her father was a preacher, which inspired her earliest music, because we're going to talk about music today. She sang gospel music at the church, but she was also drawn to country music. And she talks about how she actually only really knew country music and gospel music until her teens. She was so sort of secluded from the world that was all she knew.
Yeah, those people tend to be very religious. They work really, yeah. really hard. And the church is also the social center. So they spend a yes. lot of their time in the
so
church.
So that's their world. Why would they yeah. know anything else? So she and her sister and her cousin in her teens decided to form a singing group called the Anglos. I don't know why they called it that.
They're probably thinking of angels because, again, these are very religious, Southern religious people. Those are my people. I'm very familiar okay. with them. Yeah.
I was thinking of like Anglo-Saxon.
No, they're
you
not
know.
Thinking that. They're thinking
because
angels as a
I
reference
that
to angels.
Was, yeah. As an irony?
Yeah, I know, right?
Right?
I know, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what they're thinking. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Way yeah. more sense than the conclusion I came up with, which makes no sense. Okay. So they performed R&B music in areas around Columbia, South Carolina. And a local DJ, okay, his name was Charles Big Saul, in quotes, Green, convinced her to change her name to Linda Martell. He said, quote, your name is Linda Martell. You look like Linda. That fits you. End aww. Quote.
And Linda right. means beautiful in Spanish.
Right.
Linda.
Linda.
Yes. Yes.
So in 1962, the group took an 8-hour bus ride to Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Oh.
I bet you it's like, why is it called Muscle Shoals? I don't know.
I don't know, but it's a very famous place. I'll tell you that
yeah.
much. Yeah.
But like when you look at it written down, you're like, wait, what?
Okay. This listen, for our people who are listening, Southern people love to make up shit. We love to create words.
I live for that.
I
you
bet
know
you
I live for that.
It's they probably said they didn't pronounce it muscles. Like, listen, we love to put words together. We love to just Biggie seemed like he was Southern when he came up with conversate. It's like, no, Biggie, it's converse. He's like, no, I'm gonna make up a new word, conversate. That's very Southern. Okay, so
of course, I love a conversate. So
yeah,
you know.
And then a lot of the names in these like old American towns are like Native American names that then the non-Native American people, like, renamed and Americanized it, quote unquote, like. So Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, that makes sense. Muscle Shoals. Yeah. So they recorded their first R&B single there. Now, now they're called Linda Martell and the Anglos, and Fire Records released the song A Little Tear Was Falling From My Eyes that same year. Fortunately, that single was not successful. Aww. So meanwhile, they're also singing backup for like the Drifters and Jimmy Hughes. And they're also at the same time releasing other singles through the VJ label, such as Lonely Hours. David Brown of Rolling Stone called the song, quote, simmering forlorn girl group pop. Now, is that good or bad?
It's a little bit of both. He probably thought it was being, he may have thought he was being complimentary, but maybe. Back then the girl group has like a very misogynistic kind of like
tone to it,
like girl singer, girl group, like, you know, it's like, you need the girl singer to pop because you always need Lady Luck, you know, in the room. So, you know, but
they're just jealous of us.
Yeah. And this is the 60s, early 60s, right?
Yeah. Wow. Early 60s. So the group separated. Her cousin got married and her sister left the group. So now she's a solo artist on her own. And so she's singing on a South Carolina Air Force base. She's kind of getting gigs here and there.
That's how it is back then. Like even now, like you just got to go where you got to go. In the 80s, it was malls. It was shopping malls.
Yes. No, it's so true. Yeah. Like you just, that's just where it is.
And or fairgrounds or like bars, wherever you got to go. Yeah.
She's just like do Air Force bases. Okay. Yeah. She was heard singing country songs by Nashville furniture salesman William Duke Rayner. The names in her story are amazing.
We are a colorful bunch in the South, I tell you that much. No matter what color you are, we are a colorful bunch.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the North we are tight-assed, is that what we
No, hey, I'm one of those people like, oh, that southernness. I got to get to the North. I got to get with the Yankees. The older I've gotten, the more I appreciate it. But when I was coming up, I was like, why we just got to make up shit? We just make up everything in the South. Just make it up as we go. So,
yeah, we pretend to know everything in the North.
Yeah.
Right. We're just like, no, that's how it is. And that's how it's always been.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm from California.
I know, it's just
which
our
is
country.
Like the West.
Yeah.
You know.
It's all good. America's big.
America is big. And
very big.
Different in different areas. It really is.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I realize that.
Yeah.
Okay. So he offered to arrange a demo record. But she originally declined his offer because she thought he was a, quote, kook, end quote. But he kind of hounded, he just kept pressing, was like, you're good. So she accepted his proposal and he became her manager. Now, Charlie Pride was a black country music artist who was successful. So Rayner was like, hey, let's have a black woman country music who is so good. You know, let me get money. Let her get her thing. Right. He says, quote, I figured that if I could find a colored girl that could sing country and Western, I'd really have something. He told Ebony in 1970. So I think it was less about her being supported by him and more about him making his money.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. America. All right.
It's like Charlie Pride successful. Let's get a black woman and let's see if that works.
Yeah. So she went to Nashville. She met producer Shelby Singleton and he convinced her to record as a country singer. So she was surprised that it was going to be full country. But she recorded a demo because she had been doing R&B.
Yeah. And like well, that makes more sense. Yeah. Because that's also back then they still had race records, quote unquote,
they
separated. So anytime, basically any record a black person sang on it, no matter what the genre was a race record. So, yeah.
Well, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
Sorry. Not sorry. It's stupid.
Yeah.
I know it's a podcast, but if you could see Livetta's face right now.
Well, and also glorious. let's just be clear. Black people from the South usually love country music. I'm just going to like, like, especially back in this day, I love country music and I love like old school country music and some of the newer stuff too. And, you know, more recent stuff, but yeah, yeah. Cause it's Southern, it's country. It's like, it's all at roots. It's blues, jazz, all of that. It has all those roots of that. And yeah, it's just a hodgepodge, but I love country music. So
listen, I will admit that I am your white girl, California. I really liked Achy Breaky Heart. That was me
Don't
with a
you tear my heart.
Heart.
My achy breaky heart.
That was my first moment. I was like, oh, maybe I like country music.
I will even go way back to Patsy Cline, you know.
Okay. I mean, some
of course,
it
Dolly
is just,
Parton.
Yes.
And of course, you got the Oak Ridge Boys, you got Randy Travis, you got Reba McEntire, you got Loretta Lynn, you got like, listen, I can go on and on and on and on and on. So
could, huh? Mm-hmm. I can't because I, once again, I'm learning. All right. So let's take a moment. She's been married twice. Let's talk about her love life. We could do that.
Get
little
it,
bit.
Girl.
So she was 19 when she got married to her drummer. Now, I don't know if it's her drummer, but a drummer, Clark Thompson. And they had 3 children. And then they separated in 1966. And she later remarried business owner Ted Jacobs.
Okay.
There's like more to that part of her life, but like, I'm not that interested. I mean, get it, girl. Do you? Like, I support you.
Mm-hmm. And Miss Linda's still around doing her thing.
She
so,
is.
Hey.
Let's talk about it. So May 15th, 1969, she signed a management contract with Rayner and signed with Singleton's Plantation record label the next day. Now, you heard me. This woman who was born to sharecropping parents, who knows deeply the history of her people and what they went through, signed with Plantation Records.
White people love a plantation. They like
Damn.
To put it on. And a plantation ain't nothing but a work camp, y'all. It's just with a pretty fancy house on it. Like, they love. But it's so ubiquitous. It's just so ingrained in the culture that back then, you just like, we weren't happy about it. She wasn't happy about it. But she's like, really? Plantation? Might as well be like Sambo. Like
yeah.
The Mulatta
right?
Records.
Like,
what?
Why not?
Like.
I mean, she did say something. She did.
Of course
say,
she did.
You know, but they were like, what are you going to do? And so she felt like she had no choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she was. And I got to say, in those days, to be vocal about it, you know,
because they're getting a kick out of it. Yeah. Plantation Records. I'm going to sign me a color gal.
Oh,
yeah.
It hurts a lot.
Yep.
This
is why people don't want you to get money because you have options. You don't have to put up with shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yep.
They found her some songs to record. She recorded the song Color Him Father. And 10 others. It was another song that was a pop song by the Winstons that she re-recorded as country style. And then 10 other tracks. She recorded this all in one 12-hour work session. So what I just heard, not, she's amazing, because she is amazing, but that they worked her too fucking hard because they just wanted to get it done.
Well,
that's
you know
what
why
I heard.
They worked her so hard? Because it's Plantation Records.
Yes.
I mean, fucking racist. So, like,
yeah. Yes.
Even when they're supposedly in business with you and you work with
right.
them, they just cannot help themselves to just like, just stick the knife in and turn it. Like, they just can't help themselves.
You're going to make money only because of her talent and her skills and her abilities. You've done nothing but give her a studio.
Yeah.
Like, fucking hate this. Okay. but I love her. So that song was her first plantation single in July 1969. It climbed to number 22 on the Billboard Hot Country Songs.
What was the name of the single?
Okay. It was the Color Him Father.
Okay. Okay.
And then the song, follow-up song, Before the Next Teardrop Falls, reached number 33 on the Billboard Country Chart in 1970. The whole record reached 40 in the Billboard Hot Country Albums. So she was then hired by a booking agent, Hubert Long, and he helped arrange like entertainment opportunities, like AKA go guest on this show, go like... So she made television appearances on The Bill Anderson Show and Hee Haw.
Hee Haw.
Hee Haw. She made her debut on the Grand Ole Opry radio broadcast after Rayner, her manager, played her recent record for an official at the company.
Wow. That's a big deal.
Yes. She became, with her opera debut, she became the first black female artist to play the show and eventually performed there a total of 12 times.
Wow.
So... In the American South, she was marketed as, quote, first female Negro country artist, end quote, and was put on package shows with country artists Waylon Jennings and Hank Snow. And I know
Waylon
about
Jennings.
Package. Yes. Right? Which I think is really good. Like, she's kind of hitting
it. No, this is huge. Yeah.
But fun fact, she is still black and America is still gonna America.
And they always gonna remind you, you're a colored gal. Yeah. They love gal. Gal is the equivalent of boy, in case you guys don't know.
Yeah.
It's equivalent of boy.
Do you like that America's still gonna America? I don't know. I might not keep that. So she was taunted by white audiences. They'd shout racial slurs at her while she was performing. Who raised you, motherfuckers? Who raised you? Right? Don't have nothing nice to say. Don't say it. You know.
Wow.
So she tells Rolling Stone, quote, "You're going to run into hecklers. And I did. You felt pretty awful."
Aww.
So as her career progressed, she says that the taunting did lessen, but it never entirely left. The name calling continued to cause her professional conflict, but she still kept performing. In 1970, her manager, Rayner, sued her because he believed he deserved a higher commission. Because this white man, okay, off of her talent. Yeah. If I'm wrong that he's not white, you can tell me. I'm just making assumptions here.
No, he is.
Yeah, thank you. So Singleton, the guy who ran the plantation records, cool, helped bring attention away from the lawsuit, but he also informed her that he would not be promoting her as heavily because Jeannie C. Riley, P.S. White Lady, was selling more records than she was.
So okay. Is she on the same label? Is that
yes?
What?
And okay. So he was like, you right?
See, they just keep fucking with this woman, playing in her face, and like,
yeah.
This is the side of the entertainment business people don't realize who are not in the industry.
Yeah.
A lot, it's not talent that keeps people from succeeding.
No,
a lot
it's
of this
not.
Is this behind the scenes shit that like you're just like, really, dude, really? So now you're just not gonna promote it.
Exactly. Like
not gonna promote me.
Did she sell three more records because she's like new and she's white and people like her? It's fine. And no disrespect to Jeannie, who I'm sure is very, very talented and she is. I looked her up. She's done a lot. But like, we can all play in the swimming pool, okay? Okay. So she left Plantation Records. She probably felt pretty good about leaving them.
Yeah.
And she cut several tunes with a different label. Then he, Singleton, found out and threatened to sue the company. Quote her, "He blackballed me. It ruined my reputation in country music." So after several more years... with very limited success, she chose to retire from the Nashville music industry.
These motherfuckers.
Yeah.
They robbed us of her talent.
Yeah. You know. So she did. She spent 2 decades singing in small clubs in different parts of the U.S., California, Florida, New York City.
So she retired from recording new music.
Okay. Yes.
Gotcha.
And then, so she held various jobs. She worked on cruise ships. She opened a record shop. In 1991, she returned to South Carolina to be closer to her children, and she became a bus driver for her home region's school district. So she still played with band on weekends. They were hired for family reunions and weddings. Can you imagine this woman? You're like, this wedding is the best wedding I have ever been to ever. You know, like, just, she belongs on a bigger stage. You're correct.
Yeah. This is why you got to support people. Yeah. Support artists. Yeah.
This is sweet. I will say many people in her area did not know who she was, but the principal of one of the high school assemblies, because remember she worked for the school district, said of her early, he said, others study about Black history. We have Black history right here in our own school.
Aww.
So, you know, she wasn't, I feel like she, I don't know, I'm not interviewing her, but I feel like she carved out a beautiful little life that she went, you know what? America is America. I'm going to live my life. So in the mid-2000s, she retired from her public school career and last performed publicly in 2011 with her band Easy, E-A-Z-Z-Y. I love it. In January 2014, the Swedish TV program called Jill's Veranda, which is like Jill's Porch in Nashville, right? Documented the search for an interview of Linda Martell. The show's hosts traveled to South Carolina to meet her, discuss her music, and why she abandoned her recording career. And they also performed with her on some of her songs. She also supports... So, in 2020, after country artist Reese Palmer named her Apple Music podcast after her album, Color Me Country... people started talking about her again. So she also supports the underrepresented voices of BIPOC artists in country music through the Color Me Country Artist Grant Fund. In 2021, a GoFundMe campaign was launched by her granddaughter to create a documentary about her career and struggles as a Black performer in Nashville. Now, aww. 2024, she appears on Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter, a country-focused studio album that I know none of y'all have heard of until right now. So I'm here to tell you that there's this great artist named Beyoncé. You're welcome. So she... Okay. Where am I? I'm reading this. Okay. So she has a 2-spoken-word appearance on the track Spaghetti and... The Linda Martell Show. On Instagram, she commented, quote, I am proud that at Beyoncé is exploring her country music roots. What she is doing is beautiful, and I'm honored to be a part of it. It's Beyoncé, after all.
Aww.
And her story is still going.
Yeah.
Right? Beyoncé has, that's how I found her. Like, if you read the notes in her album, it starts with Linda Martell.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to talk about Linda Martell.
And I have a question. The GoFundMe, is it still, can people donate to it?
I think so. I think so.
Okay. Hopefully. Yeah. Guys, if you're listening to this, go to GoFundMe and find that campaign to donate so we can get a documentary, a well-deserved documentary on her life.
I'm going to throw out there that Beyoncé might want to produce it. Because I know Beyoncé and I are like best friends.
Yeah.
So.
Only in your head, not in her head, but in your head.
What are you talking about? Beyoncé and Taylor Swift and I have lunch all the time. All the time. Best friends.
Yep. Best friends. That's wonderful.
And that is her. I mean, she was one of the first, the country music's first black artist to have commercial success.
And like, is, yeah.
That, I mean, she, as much as she like kind of hit it and then had to fade because
of the resistance and the closed doors and, yep.
And she still fought through it. And I have to say, I think about this a lot. We give so much credit for people getting through, you know, fighting through the oppression, fighting past it, being heckled and continuing on. Can we just stop the heckling? Like, can we just stop normalizing that as like, I'm like, yes, I give her all the credit, but I don't want to have to give her all that credit. I'd rather that she was able to have the career she truly deserved.
And I think people don't understand, like with black artists here in America, they often, can you imagine performing for a hostile crowd?
No.
But it's like,
you and I have performed in front of people.
And the crowd, and it affects your performance.
It does.
Like if the energy, because you can feel the energy. Like,
yeah.
Whether you just feel it because that's, you know, human beings, we're connected to each other and we communicate non-verbally mostly. And just doing that and thinking, oh, there's going to be resistance, but, you know, push through. And then just behind the scenes, not having the support from your management and your record company, who are basically, because he basically was like, well, we're not going to promote you. And that's like death to an artist.
That's what he said. Like,
especially back then.
Like, yeah. It's like, now, oh, she's doing better. Is she? Or we're just like hopping on her train. We think we might do
or
better.
Or it's like, we tried to cull a gal and it didn't work out. So we just going to drop her basically.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And so
then we're going to sue her because she's doing better doing something else with someone.
Yeah. The audacity to then sue her when she's like, well, if you're not going to support me, let me go and find somebody who will.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
It's like, okay, fine. Bye.
It's like the enemy, the call is coming from inside the house, inside the camp, and
there
not outside. So, but thank you so much for sharing that, Linda
You're
Martell.
Welcome. I love her.
Yales.
All right. Who do you have? I'm scared.
You devil, you read my mind. Because my notorious woman this week is Beyonce.
Stop!
It has to be Beyonce.
Has to be Beyonce. I did read your mind. I might have also read the entire world's mind. But anyways.
Yeah, and just so you guys know,
my God.
These women are notorious in the good way, heroic, but also because dare to go outside of the box of the limitations that the world tries to put on women, particularly black women who don't fit into a neat little box that they can dismiss. So Beyonce, now, obviously Beyonce is a mega, mega star. So Beyonce is a mega, mega star. So technically there could be three parts of her life and she's still very young, but it's not. You can look up a lot of this stuff, but I'm just going to give you guys the overview. If there's anybody out there who, because actually I didn't know some of this stuff actually. So some people may not know. So that's, you are my people, including Miriam.
Hey.
So we know like maybe the big stuff, but we don't know the origins. I think a lot of people don't, unless they're like, you know, in the hive and they've been in the hive from the beginning, the beehive or the bayhive from the beginning. So let's get started. Okay. So Beyonce, just one word, star.
Do you have to explain that? Does people not know that? Oh Lord. You know. Okay.
Well, Beyonce was born Beyonce Giselle Knowles on September 4th, 1981 in Houston, Texas, to Matthew Knowles, a Xerox sales manager turned music entrepreneur, and Celestine Ann Beyonce, aka Tina Knowles, a hairdresser and salon owner. I did not know her mother's name is Celestine Ann. That is so country. That is very
Southern. I love
it.
I thought it was Tina.
Tina is her, I guess her nickname is probably what the family calls her, but she was born Celestine Ann. So
beautiful.
And side note, so Beyonce is her mother is the first name. Beyonce's first name is her mother's last name, right? Maiden last name. But actually her mother's actual maiden last name is Beyonce. Excuse me. B-E-Y-I-N-C-E. But when she was born, there was a spelling error because it's the fucking South.
Yeah.
And they gave her the last name of Beyonce. But actually,
wow,
Beyonce's maternal line is actually Beyonce.
So we should be calling her Beyonce.
Yes. But
okay, Beyonce.
So I think that's just, I love how Black people innovate. So her mother's like, her mother, that. And so that is why Miss Tina's last name is different from her relatives. So okay. When you go and look at her relatives, they all have Beyonce.
Oh.
But it's actually Beyonce is the actual last name, maiden last name. So I think it's so great that she gave their firstborn, Beyonce, because she's the oldest of two.
Yes.
Her maiden name as her firstborn's first name, which I think is very beautiful. And Beyonce is one of two. She's the oldest of two girls. Solange Knowles is her younger sister, who's also a very successful recording artist. And
yes.
We call her like a Black girl joy poster child. She's like a flower child. Get into Solange. So because Solange ain't no joke. So
I will say this, like if I had a choice between being Beyonce or Solange, I would be Solange.
I would be Solange. Yeah.
All absolutely. Eyes are not on me, but I'm still doing my thing. You know,
Solange is living her best life.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Don't and cry like, for not, Solange. Okay?
No, I'm not. Yes. I'm not. I'd like to have lunch with her.
Yes. Now, as a child, Beyonce went to St. Mary's Catholic Montessori School in Houston because on her mother's side, they're Catholic. On her father's side, they're Methodist. So Protestant and then Catholic. And she enrolled in dance classes there. Her singing ability was discovered when dance instructor Darlette Johnson began humming a song and Beyonce finished it, able to hit the high-pitched notes.
Damn, girl. So you can't teach that.
Teaching these little kids and then you start singing and then the kids like, ah, you're like, oh my God, what?
Mm.
So it's like, and people love that. And I, as a Southern Black girl who was grew up a little cute Black girl in the South, I will tell you in the Black community, when they discover a child has a gift, they're very excited and they're very supportive usually. So they're like, we got to get this baby somewhere. Yeah. She got to be singing. You know,
yes,
so
that's
after that, Beyonce started performing in various singing and dancing competitions. Now, when she was 8, she met Latavia Robertson at an audition for an all-girl entertainment group. So basically, she was trying to get into a kids group. She's 8.
Right.
They were placed in a group. I know, 8 years old. They were placed in a group called Girls Time, T-Y-M-E, with three other girls. And in the group, they rapped and sang and danced.
Damn.
At various shows, basically on the talent show circuit in Houston. So around town, these cute little girls. Can you imagine? Oh my God.
Yeah,
so cute.
Oh my God.
And this would be like 1989. So cute.
Okay.
So in the fall of 1990, she enrolled in Parker Elementary School, a music magnet school in Houston, where she performed with the choir. She went on to attend the high school for the performing and visual arts and later Alif Elsick High School. I didn't even know that. I didn't know she was in performing arts high school, but that makes sense.
I didn't either.
She was also a member of the choir at St. John's United Methodist Church, probably her family's church, where she sang her first solo and was the soloist for 2 years.
Oh.
So she's
surprising. Why am I like, that voice is the soloist for at least 2 years.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So she's working. She's singing at school. She's singing in church. She's just singing. And by all accounts, all of her friends, all of her family members would tell you that even at that young age, Beyonce was incredibly ambitious, incredibly ambitious and loved working and singing and all at like 8, 9 years old. Right. So now throughout this time, she and Latavia and the other girls continued to sing in their group that eventually included her, quote, play sister, Kelly Rowland, who began living with the Knowles family at some point. During this kind of hazy, basically in the South, we call what we call a play cousin, play sister. Basically, it's a family friend. Maybe if they're going through some stuff, families will take in the children.
Okay. Yeah.
And I believe that Kelly's mom, who was then a single mom because the father had been abusive and just basically abandoned them, she was struggling. So she needed help with her babies, and the Knowles stepped in, and they, it probably started off like Kelly was just staying there a little bit, and then she just sort of moved in with them, and they, she became their third daughter, basically. So Beyonce, Latavia, Kelly, and another girl named Tamar Davi, and another girl, all were in this group, Girls Time. So they're performing. And then after one of their performances, R&B producer Arne Frager brought them to his Northern California studio and placed them on Star Search.
God, I just became 9 years old right now.
Star Search at the time.
I must have seen them.
Go to YouTube. You can find it.
I will do that now. Not right now.
They were the largest. Star Search was the largest talent show on national television at the time.
Yes.
Now, Girls Time, they didn't win. And they were distraught. They were very little. They were very young. And Beyonce later said that the song they performed was just not a good song. So they were devastated the way only kids can be devastated.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my
like,
heart.
It's just. Yeah. Now, in 1995, Beyonce's father, Matthew, believing that with the right management, the girls could really go far. So he really started to believe in them. And by all accounts, he also saw how driven they were, and they were very disciplined. So he resigned from his job to manage the group. So he had this like high paying job with Xerox. It was a good job, as we say in the South. So he dropped a few of the girls, including Tamar, and he added,
Tamar.
I know, it could have been that, you know, she was a kid. Maybe she just didn't have, who knows?
She wanted to play soccer also, you know?
Yeah, it could like, be. Yeah. Knows? Maybe she had other interests. And then he added LaToya Luckett. And so basically the group became a quartet with, Latavia, Beyonce, Kelly, and LaToya.
Okay.
Okay, so now the move reduced the family's income by half.
Yeah.
And so Beyonce's parents were forced to sell their house and cars and move into apartments.
Dang, these are steps I would not take. But I'm wrong, because Beyonce, right?
Well, it caused a lot of strain in the relationship, because you can imagine Miss Tina, who's a business owner. She has her own salon. Is like, what the hell are you doing? And then you lose half of the income. So, but Matthew had a vision. You know, he was, I know Beyonce didn't like that that comparison with Joe Jackson, because Joe Jackson famously is believed to have been borderline abusive with the kids.
Not the nicest.
But I also think that people don't understand that Joe Jackson was, he had a wife and six or seven kids living in a small two bedroom apartment and with no prospects. So Joe was doing a lot of it also out of like, I think famously Joe Jackson saw the Osmonds and was like, my kids could do that. And was like, well, let's do it. So, and it wouldn't have worked if he didn't have incredibly gifted children. So I think Matthew similarly saw that his children and this group was really, really talented, and they really need the right management. Because as we can see from your story about Linda Martell, if you don't have the right management and backing, it'll go nowhere.
Right.
So he probably was sitting on the sidelines, was like, I can do better than this. So he basically made a commitment to getting them where they needed to go. So as a foursome, the group continued to perform around town and as opening acts for other more established R&B girl groups. And this helped them to get more notoriety, and also in this new iteration, because again, now it's a quartet. The girls auditioned for record labels and were finally signed to Elektra Records.
Okay.
And then they moved to Atlanta Records briefly to work on their first recording, only to be cut by the company. Yep, that happens. Alicia Keys has a very famous story of like she had another album, and then like what happens is there's like a shuffle of executives. So the executive leaves, then the new executive just cuts or like puts on the shelf the projects that the previous exec. So it's just a lot that goes into becoming successful.
Yeah.
Now this put further strain on the family, because imagine they get signed. So Miss Tina's probably thinking, okay, finally we'll see some money.
Right.
Who knows what other stuff was going on in their marriage? Who knows? But her parents separated. I didn't know this.
I did not know this.
So they officially separated. Now, on October 5th, 1995, Dwayne Wiggins Grassroots Entertainment signed the group. And in 1996, the girls began recording their debut album under an agreement with Sony Music.
Okay.
After this happened, the Knowles family reunited. And shortly after, the group got a contract with Columbia Records. Now we're cooking. Right.
All right.
So this is 96. So Beyonce
Are they back together?
They're back together.
Okay, good. I was worried about that. Okay.
So Beyonce's 15.
That's a lot.
That's
a lot. She is a child. Her parents have separated.
And I think all the girls are around the same age. I think they're all like probably 14, 15, 16. They're all around the same age. They're very young.
That's really intense. Yeah.
But they got signed to Columbia Records. Columbia Records is a big deal, you know. So they continue to perform as they're working on their new music as an opening act for, again, other more established groups like SWV, Drew Hill, and Immature. And it's so funny. Recently, SWV had a thing with Escape and, you know, like a reality show. And they were saying, Coco and Taj from SWV were saying that they remember performing in Houston and how Beyonce and Kelly would come up to them and be like, oh my God, we love you so much. And like how they were just such cute young girls and like they were talented, but like just how like they remember them being like meeting kids. These 14 and 15 year olds. Yeah. Now, in 1996, they changed their name to Destiny's Child.
Yes.
And it's based upon the passage in the book of Isaiah.
Okay.
So in 1997, Destiny's Child released their major label debut song called Killing Time on the soundtrack, the 1997 soundtrack for Men in Black.
Okay.
In November of that year, the group released their debut single and first major hit, No, No, No.
No. Okay, yes.
Now, I remember this first one that came out. I didn't like the song. I was just like, because it was kind of slow.
I liked it.
Really pop until Wyclef Jean from the Fugees did a remix. And it was much more like it had that Wyclef. Like
maybe
flavor.
That's the version I'm remembering.
Yeah, and that's the one that really popped. It like really, really popped. In February 1998, so the following year, the group were established as a viable act in the music industry because off of the success of that, you know, because it was on the charts for a while and then it took a while. And then that remix came and that's when I think they got on most of our radar.
Yes.
That year, they released The Writings on the Wall. Actually, the following year, in 1999. And that became a multi-platinum selling record. And that was their second album.
Okay.
That was their second, The Writings on the Wall. Because again, they've been struggling since like what, 80, like 90. So they've been, and these, 80, that's a long time for a 14 or 15 year old, right? So they've been struggling since they were like nine, 10. And then they get signed, then they get dropped, which I actually think is probably the fact that they kept going is a testament to their work ethic, which we see now in full display with Beyonce, but also with Kelly and Latoya and Latavia, these young, ambitious little girls. I love this. But it was a little struggle because it's like you got to hit at the right time. It's got to be the right thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that they got Wyclef to even agree to do a remix is a huge get. A lot of this, I really think, has a lot to do with Matthew behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Matthew ain't taking no crap. He's doing what he needs to do. And this is why a good manager or a rep can really make all the difference.
Yeah. Because
you just want to create, but you need somebody making these deals, like getting Wyclef to agree to do the the remix and that, right, that right, stuff. Right. But yeah, the second album, The Writing's on the Wall, and that's the one that most people will remember them from. And that came out in 1999. Again, it was a multi-platinum selling record. And it features songs such as Bills, Bills, Bills.
Yes.
Can you pay my bill? Won't bills. Jumpin', Jumpin'. Ladies, leave your man at home. Say my name, say my name.
This song is around you, baby. I love you. Here we come. You all listen to the album more. And not us. Okay.
Yeah. and it was so successful that it won the best R&B performance by a duo or group with vocals and the best R&B song at the 43rd annual Grammy Awards.
I mean, that is correct. Because if you look at that album and you like, you love every song. And if you're like, I don't remember that album. Yes, you do. And you love every song. You just do. Yeah. Like it's in your blood.
It sold more than 8 million copies worldwide. And this is when they were still selling CDs, people, because this was 1999.
I
was like,
I think I had the CD.
So Beyonce's 18 years old.
Damn. Didn't know that.
Now, despite critical and commercial success, the group was plagued by internal conflict and legal turmoil. As Latavia and Latoya attempted to split from the group's manager, Matthew Knowles, Beyonce's father, citing favoritism for Beyonce and Kelly.
Okay.
They have a point.
Probably.
And if you look at Writings on the Wall, I remember vividly, like, Beyonce herself had a very distinctive look that was kind of highlighted her. Like, she started wearing the blonde braids and da-da-da-da. And, like,
you know, Daddy was like, let's highlight some braids.
It's definitely some favoritism. I mean, that was obvious from us on the outside. And Matthew, I've heard him talk about this. He was like, how are you going to have two different managers in a group? But it's like, well, you also have to hear them, like...
Yeah.
So unfortunately,
and like in his vague defense, which he probably just outright did have favoritism, but he might not have even noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like
it's his daughter,
and he's also like she's the lead vocalist, right? So there's a little smell of like Diana Ross is, you start off as the Supremes, and then Diana Ross is. Obviously, it's not the same relationship, but Diana Ross is having relations, allegedly, with Barry Gordy. So because of that favoritism, he starts to highlight her more, even though they all started off as a group. Supremes was a group.
Yeah.
And then because of that, she started feeling herself and treating her the girls that she grew up with. They all grew up together like they're her backup, and it's like
no.
Also, it's all inspired by the play and movie Dreamgirls. So look it up. But anyway,
okay.
So this is what's going on. And in their defense, they're like 18, and like probably now as older women, they're probably like, maybe we should have just like gone along and maybe got on our third album and then said something, because they are only doing this after the second album. And also, I don't know if the money was different. I don't know, because this album was hugely successful. So unfortunately, he was not having that. So he cut Latavia and Latoya, who again, Latavia and Beyonce started together.
Yeah.
Like they were together even before Kelly came, like children came in. So I can only imagine how devastating that was, because I bet you Latavia and Latoya never thought that they would just get cut and discarded in a sense so quickly.
Probably not, because they brought so much success, and they really wanted to be heard. They were kids.
Yeah, because they're 18. They're all around the same age. And so they probably thought that they would just work it out, but he cut them. And I think from his point of view and Beyonce's point of view, they're like, we have momentum. Why are we dealing with this now? Well, it's like, because you're the one who's benefiting from the favoritism.
Maybe hear them out. Hear them out.
So who knows what was going on behind the scenes, but I just have to bring that up. So unfortunately, in early 2000, Matthew replaced Latavia and Latoya with Michelle Williams and Farrah Franklin. However, Franklin quit after a few months, leaving the group as a trio. Because, and I remember there's a very famous interview with Michelle and Farrah there. And Farrah's doing this weird thing. Again, they're very young, where she's just complaining about, like, she doesn't work with the group. I myself, full disclosure, I had been in a couple girl groups long time ago. And there is this thing that people don't realize how hard it is to create a group. They really don't know the work. A lot of people want the success and the red carpets and all that other stuff. And even being in the studio is cute, but it's like, you have to be committed. You have to be disciplined. Yeah. And many 18, 19 year olds don't have that. Right. And Farrah, like, it's so funny because they're looking at her like she did not know how to read the room. They cut her with a quickness. Like, yeah. she was in an interview and I think they cut her like right out of the interview because they were like, she does not really realize what's going on here. Like,
we have to rehearse every day. Yes, you do.
Yeah. And it has to be about the group. Always, always, always. Because what you're doing, you're 18, you're 19. Like, your head should be in the game. So,
I have to say, total side note. My kids do like this variety show at school. Super cute. It's like, I live near LA, so very well produced, but children being like, twinkle, twinkle. You know, so it is a wide variety of range. Well, when my children are a part of things, it drives them insane. And let me tell you, I'm holding back. What I would like to do and what I do are very different things. Because
They're kids, and
this should be fun. So I'm going to hold back because what I want to do is go on Star Search with you people.
Well, also, you're in the business, so you understand.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's all hands on deck. Like, they're trying to get momentum. They just sold 8 million fucking records.
Yeah. Like, no, exactly.
I would say, having been one of these girls where you get like put together with some other girls, if I came into a group that had sold 8 million records, I'm like, where you need me to be?
Yes.
What time? How long? Uh-huh.
I will be 20 minutes early for every single thing. I will know every note, every move.
Yeah, Farrah, bless her heart. I hope she's doing well. I'm sure she's prospering. Like, she just did not read the room, because even in that interview, it's so obvious. It's like, she is not picking up the cues. So it became a trio from that moment on out. And I think in a lot of ways, Beyonce felt betrayed by LaToya and LaTavia. I think maybe now at her age, she can understand how they felt.
Right.
Yeah. But she felt like they were kind of trying to hold them hostage and sabotage the momentum to get what they wanted.
Yeah.
But in actuality, they also probably felt like they weren't being heard. Right. Cause this is, and Matthew Knowles is a very handsome man. He's tall. He's a tall, tall man. So he's a very intimidating figure, I'm sure. And he's a father figure to these girls who felt like basically their father was playing favorites. Let's put that out there. So, but it became a trio from that moment on. And they recorded Independent Woman Part 1, which was part of the Charlie's Angels soundtrack. And it became a charting single. It topped the U.S. Billboard's 100 chart for 11 consecutive weeks. In late 2000... Destiny's Child announced their plan to embark on their individual side projects. So it also feeds into that thing that, oh, they're just kind of trying to set Beyonce up to become a solo artist.
I mean, probably.
So, and it would include that they all would release solo albums.
Okay.
During this time, Beyonce began to take acting roles. She made an MTV made for TV film called Carmen, a hip-hopera in 2001 alongside Mekhi Phifer. She also played Foxy Cleopatra along Mike Myers in the Austin Powers in Gold Member film in 2002. She also starred opposite Cuba Gooding Jr. in The Fighting Temptations in 2003, The Pink Panther with Steve Martin in 2006, Dreamgirls also in 2006, along with Jennifer Hudson, Jamie Foxx, and Eddie Murphy.
I love Dreamgirls so much.
Yes.
I love it so much.
Yes. Now from about 2000, and those go from 2000 through 2006, but between 2000 and 2003, they took a break from the group, and she recorded her debut solo album called Dangerously in Love, and it was released in 2003. It was a huge, massive success.
Yes, it was.
And because of that, maybe very like, oh, I can do it on my own, Destiny's Child actually reunited to record their fourth album and final album. So it was the one album that didn't really get any traction. Writing's on the Wall. this third album with now as a trio with Michelle. Right. And then they took a break and then they came back to do the fourth album. And it was called Destiny Fulfilled. Oh, now, right. After that, the group officially separated, disbanded. Now, in the meantime, side note, both Kelly Rowland's solo album did extremely well, especially overseas, which is so interesting. Only Beyonce is only recently, I think since Lemonade, started doing well overseas. But they love, I can tell you right now, they in the UK, they love Kelly Rowland.
Like, all right.
Because she did more of a dance kind of thing and she found her voice as an artist. She became massively successful. She became probably more successful outside of the US than Beyonce. And then Beyonce was more successful with her records in the US, solo records, than Kelly. But it evens out in a lot of ways because I know people are always keeping track. But no, don't sleep on Kelly Rowland. Kelly Rowland is like massively successful. I don't know why people are always trying to like make her out like she's not successful. But anyway, and same thing with Michelle. Michelle is massively successful and she did a gospel album because she's more religious sort of minded. But the trick is how do you create your own sound? And so in that hiatus, they all went away and figured out what is my sound as a solo artist.
Right.
So, but again, they came back and finished that fourth album. And then after that, Beyonce followed up with in the U.S. with her number one solo album, B-Day. So it was after Dangerously in Love, which came out in 2006. And then in 2007, I Am Sasha Fierce, which
All the single ladies.
Yes.
None of those were the notes. So no one can sue us.
Right.
That's right. We play it safe. We could totally sing just like Beyonce, but we're choosing not to. Okay.
Yeah, totally.
That's it. That's the problem.
Now, 2008 also was the same year she married fellow musician Sean Carter, a.k.a. Jay-Z.
Yes.
Now, the following year in 2009, she starred in a film called Obsessed with Idris Elba. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie.
No. I don't even know about it.
It is so fucking ridiculous. It is. It's one of those like funny. It's ridiculous. It's fun. It's an enjoyable watch. It's entertaining. Okay. Basically, her and Idris Elba are a married couple. And now what is her name? The girl from Heroes. She was in Legally Blonde. Yeah.
Yeah.
She is like a secretary in his office and she's trying to move in on
him. Oh my
God.
I know what movie you're talking about.
And Beyonce is like, I'm not having it, bitch. You know, it's just, it's a fun watch.
Yeah.
Now the following year, she released B-Day in 2006. And again, between 2001 and 2006, she's doing these movies and recording. So there's a lot going on. But in 2000, the following year, she announced that she was going to take a hiatus from her music career. In 2010, she announced this, heeding her mother's advice, quote, to live life, to be inspired by things again, end quote.
Yeah.
Because basically from the time she was 8 till like, 2010. So what is that? She's like, I don't know. I can't do math. So 2011
it's
would
like
be
30 years. No, 20 years.
No, long so time. 1981 to 2001.
Oh, because
she's 29.
This is how long it takes for Lovetta and Miriam to do math.
Yeah, blame American long school time. System.
American
so
school
she's
system.
Almost 30 because 2011 she'd be 30. So she's been working nonstop, like. Building a career, and also knowing what we know, because she's more open, especially in the last couple years, because she's an icon at this point. She was saying that, and I didn't know that her parents had broken up. So they went from having like a middle class, maybe upper middle class existence to having like a solid middle class, bordering on working middle class.
Yeah.
Existence. And then she said she felt pressure to succeed because she didn't want to let her family down.
Yeah.
So she's working, but it's also good to rest. So she started, she took a hiatus in 2010. During that break, she and her father also parted ways as business partners.
Oh.
It was rumored around that time, allegedly, that there was some money maybe going, like, I don't know. Maybe the money was not handled in the way that she wanted or she didn't know about. So they kind of separated. That must have been really, really hard because this is your hero. And by all accounts, if it wasn't for Matthew, these girls would not have succeeded. Yeah.
Are they still like close?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
But they just parted ways. I mean, Janet Jackson did it with Joe Jackson. At some point, she's like, Dad, I need to go. Yeah. Like, and that's what control is about. Oh, control.
Yeah.
You know. So now during that break.
All grown up. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
Now, during that break, she visited multiple European cities, the Great Wall of China, the Egyptian pyramids, Australia, English music festivals, and various museums and ballet performances.
That's great.
She even wrote an article for Essence magazine called Eat, Play, Love. And it talked about like her experiences. It garnered a writing award from the New York Association of Black Journalists, but it was just about her experiences because keep in mind, this is a girl who she graduated from high school and she was like, had a hit single. She didn't go to college. So she didn't have that learning about history and putting it into context. She's just living her life. So she's reading and then actually probably going to see these things, right? You read about the pyramids, but then you see them.
I was listening to Sarah Silverman's podcast, which is like advice. And it was the cutest. I'm total sidetracking here. Little girl was like, I'm 9 years old. And my mom says, like, I want to be an actress now. Do you work with kid actors? And Sarah was like, listen, your mom's probably right to like not do it right now. She's like, you want to get the experiences like as a human for you to then translate that into the arts. And if you don't have those real human experiences, then how can you like, and I feel like that's where Beyonce got, oh wait, I want to be like a person doing people things. I think that's brilliant.
And also correct, I will say, you know? I came late. I mean, obviously I love Destiny's Child or you know, I wasn't like, I love their music. I always love a
you
girl
group,
right?
You were awake in the early 2000s, yes, is what you're saying. Yes.
But I always felt like her music didn't really have any deeper meaning. She felt like she was on autopilot to me. Like I didn't know what she was trying to say as an artist. So when she released her stuff, like, yeah, it was good. I just felt like it was, and what it was is that it wasn't coming from any real experiences, really.
Right. Yeah.
And her mom was right. Like you, and as an artist, you need to always be experiencing things. You can't always be in a bubble, because she had been in a bubble basically for like 12 years or even more. Like she had been in a bubble, you know, and then once you become successful, the bubble gets even smaller. Right.
You're right.
But I love an ambitious woman. I admire that. I love it. Little ambitious girls. And I love that they're able to express their ambition. But I just always felt like I wasn't in the hive. I was just, I liked her, but I wasn't in the hive. And, you know, obviously there's some songs I bought and stuff like that. I think I actually did buy Dangerously in Love, but it wasn't one of those albums that I could play from beginning to end. She wasn't for me yet, right?
I liked some of the album, but I mean, Sasha Fierce is pretty fierce.
Yeah, okay. But that's also because she was a married lady now. She was an adult too. So, and then after this hiatus, she took about 9 months. She got back to work and she got back into acting and doing music. And in 2011, she released 4. That's like her favorite number, which I thought was it's even better record. Later that year, she announced her pregnancy.
Yes.
During a performance of Love on Top, which is one of my favorite songs. Baby, it's you. Da, 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 da.
Oh my God.
Anyway, at the 2011 MTV Music Awards, she finished the performance by unbuttoning her blazer and rubbing her stomach to confirm that her pregnancy.
Oh my God.
The following year, their first child, Blue Ivy Carter, was born on January 7, 2012. And she's all of our baby. Also, people, now we know that she had experienced miscarriages.
Yeah.
All these things before, you know, they had success and a healthy pregnancy and birth. Now, after creating her own management company, Parkwood Entertainment, she achieved probably her first concrete bout of critical acclaim for her experimental visual self-titled album, Beyoncé, in 2013. And this is when I was like, okay, I'm on board. Like, that's the first album that she released that I could play from the beginning to end for me, because it also had Partition. It was dirt. She a grown ass woman. It's kind of raunchy. It's like There's like some disco inspired stuff. It's just like fun. It's like, this is a grown woman's record. And she had grown just as a person, but now she's a mom and a wife.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But my favorite album.
Let's go it.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite. It's close with the Renaissance. But 3 years later, in 2016, she released Lemonade.
Yes, she did.
And that became her most critically acclaimed work of her career. Lemonade, when it came out, it is brilliant.
Yes.
Fucking. I liked Untitled. I was like, oh, I like this. Lemonade came out. I was blown away. And unfortunately, I think it because it was a lot of it was about her issues with her and her husband that they alluded to, the infidelity and all this stuff. But I felt like it was intensely personal. I get emotional when I listen to Lemonade. Yeah. Like, you know, when she's like listening to him talk to somebody, just so. And then Daddy Lessons is on that. Like, Lemonade is fucking brilliant.
Do you know
I think it's
funny?
Flawless.
I think that Lemonade, like, I, you know how like the generation ahead of us, the problematic one, their thing of like, where were you when JFK was shot? Uh-huh. I feel like, where were you when Lemonade came out? I feel like, cause I've had this conversation and I can tell you, I put my babies down for their nap. I was exhausted and I'd heard that you could watch the video. Like somehow I had access to it and I thought it was just a video, like one, you know, 4 minute thing.
Yeah.
And the next thing I know, an hour had passed and I was like, whoa, like I remember it. It was powerful.
Because it's a visual album that accompanied. Yeah. And this is, Beyonce is definitely the child of Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Prince, Stevie Wonder. She's like a child of all of those like major influences.
Yeah.
But she also is a child of Michael and Janet in that sense that she understood the power of the visual. But she came up in the music industry at a time where music videos were kind of like, they were okay, but they weren't like what they were in like the 80s when she was still very young.
Yes.
And like Thriller came out even Janet's State of the World Today, 1812
I can watch Lovetta figure this out for days.
Miss you much.
Miss you much. I miss you much.
What's the other the one where they're like all?
Listen,
it's like
I don't
anyway.
Know.
Like she came up in a time where like videos were like movies. Like,
yes.
Like my favorite thing is to watch people watch Thriller for the first time because have no idea what's coming. And it's just like so amazing. Right.
I love it. No, I love it, too. It's really true. And I have kids. So we're like, this is your education. Sit down, children.
So she, in a sense, is bringing this back with Lemonade because, of course, you know, with Writings on the Wall, they did videos and very fun videos. Like, but with Lemonade, it was because it was a visual album along that accompanied the music. And
yes.
I think it's fucking brilliant. And it was like her most acclaimed work of her career. The next year, it was rumored, it was announced that she was going to headline Coachella Music Festival, but she had to pull out for unknown reasons. But in a surprise post in February of 2017, she shared a photo of herself cradling her baby bump.
Yeah.
So she had to forego that. So later that year, on June 13, 2017, 5 years after their first, she and her husband welcomed twins.
Twins. We're the same. I had twins,
too.
You're
the same. Yep. Sir and Rumi Carter. Aww. So now, this is what I love about her. Beyonce's like, yeah, most people can just retire. Like, this is great. Like,
right.
She's like, I've done the thing. I've done the damn thing. Mm-mm. She is not one to let grass grow under her feet. So after taking some time off, obviously, for maternity leave, to spend time with her family, she got back to work. And so she also had to prepare for the following year. And she said that agreeing to headline would get her, like, give her some time, but also give her a schedule because she wanted to get back to work. So the following year, she actually headlined Coachella in 2018. It was a historic event. And she began during that time filming footage for something that would be called Homecoming, a film by Beyonce, which chronicled her getting back, you know, losing the baby weight, just getting back into like performing, you know, and it was released as a film on Netflix in 2019.
It's so good. And for someone who does not like porta potties and will never ever go to Coachella, it's like I got to go to Coachella, but like I didn't have to use a gross, disgusting toilet that I will not use.
And I will I think it's YouTube. They actually played the performances on like on, you could watch it on YouTube for both nights that she headlined.
Oh shit! And I wish I knew that.
Yeah, and that's how I watched it. So then when the film came out, some of it looked familiar. Obviously, it's, you know, it's a film, and so it's edited a certain way. But see, so the following year on Netflix, they released the film that was from the footage of her performance at Coachella. So we watched it in 2018, and then 2019, we got to watch it again, but it was also accompanied by an album called Homecoming, the live album.
So good. Listen, let me tell you, I was so in good. Marching band, and she honors the marching band so aggressively, and she has twins, and so I feel like Beyonce and I are
y'all
like
the same
sisters?
Person. Like, yeah, y'all the same person.
Maybe you're talking to Beyonce right now, Lovetta.
Yeah. And also in this film, because she says that she never went to college, but she always loved HBCUs, historical black colleges and universities. And so she would go to like homecoming for these performances because they would go all out, as Miriam can tell you, she was in marching band. So they would go all out. So she wanted to pay homage. And that's what a lot of the themes and the imagery is for. It's so good. Watch it on Netflix. It's so good.
Yeah.
Now, later, it was reported that she and Beyonce, that she had signed a contract with Netflix for $60 million to produce three different projects, and one including Homecoming.
Okay.
So she turned her recovery and her getting back to work into money.
Yes, she did.
That's a boss move. That's a fucking boss move.
You're going to follow me while I eat this apple.
They basically paid her to get into shape and perform. So she got paid double it.
Let me tell you, you can pay for the nutritionist, you can pay for the trainer, you can pay to like have a sleep person sing songs to you to make sure you get the rest you need. You know what I'm saying?
She basically got them to pay her $20 million to get back in shape. I love it. That's a boss move. Mm-hmm. Now, that same year, she voiced the character of Nala in the remake and the live action remake of The Lion King.
And
she released an album, The Lion King, The Gift, which she called a sonic cinema. So it's she's keeping in this themes of creating like a visual, like visually stunning movies along with the our albums, along with the vocals and stuff like that. Now,
it's brilliant.
I love The Gift. I don't know. It got a lot of kickback. I think The Gift is brilliant. It's has a lot of influences from R&B, pop, hip hop, and Afrobeat. The songs were produced by African producers, which Beyonce said was because of authenticity and heart were important to her because the film, The Lion King, is set in Africa.
I haven't heard it. And I think I would love it because I love African music.
It's like, and I will tell you, after Lemonade, I just basically buy all of Beyonce's album. Like, she's like, one of the few people I'm just like, I just buy it. I'll pre-buy it. Yep. Bye.
Awesome.
Because she's going to give you a show. Again, she is the child of Michael, Prince, Janet. Like, she is giving you a show. These other girls can't even be doing, they don't know how to do that. Like, she's giving you a show.
Yeah.
Now, over the pandemic, we all went into the pandemic in 2020 when we all needed a release.
Yep.
She released Renaissance.
Yes,
which was a queer, a black queer inspired dance album. Some people have described. It came out in 22. It dropped. She just dropped it. It came when we needed it.
Yes.
And it's brilliant. I think Lemonade is my favorite. But I think Lemonade and Renaissance are always fighting for one and two of my favorite Beyonce, like, because they're so fucking brilliant. When she released it, she became the first female artist to have their first seven studio albums debut at number one on Billboard 200.
Oh, wow.
Again, the song Renaissance, I was just playing it over and over and over. And over. It's just brilliant. Like, it just, I just love it. And it's, but it frustrated some fans who have been used to Lemonade.
Yeah.
Homecoming. The Gift, like with it being accompanied by visuals or videos or like a movie inspired by it. But Beyonce was like, she said famously on her tour, you are the vision. You're the visual baby. Now, it was rumored, though, that she had had ankle surgery So around that time, that could have been the reason, but who knows? Maybe she just wants to like mix it up.
Yeah.
Don't want to get you like, because I think this woman is brilliant. Now, but, and also because at this point after Lemonade, I feel like, and then like the, Homecoming and then like Renaissance, she basically was, had cemented herself as one of the greats along with Michael, Janet, Prince, Madonna, like one of the greats that like it would one name just, she can just, we're going to be here and you just release it when you're ready and we will buy it.
Yeah.
which brings me to, last year also, I'm almost finished. Last year in 2023, she made a brief public appearance because everybody was like, when we get individuals, when we get individuals. And it's like, well, I guess we're not getting individuals. So she performed at a private show in Dubai and you can tell her foot. She did kind of look like she was like kind of taking it easy from the leaked video because it's supposed to be a private event. And she performed. She sounded great as always. She looked great. And she was reportedly paid $24 million to perform for one night.
Wow.
I mean,
listen, I'm willing to sing songs for one night.
Take the money, man.
I will take that money.
Now, so to keep us on our toes, because she's playing with us now, a few days later on February 1st, she announced the Renaissance World Tour. Again, we have no visuals.
Right.
So people are freaking out. So people are chomping at the bit to get something.
Yes.
And she announced dates for North America and Europe. And it broke attendance records, ticket sales. It single-handedly revised silver clothing because she had requests. So local economies, which I think is so brilliant, local economies actually boomed because people were spending money in preparation for their outfits for the tour. It's brilliant.
So listen, and I love Taylor Swift. I do.
Yes. Oh, yes.
But she got maybe double the media attention that Beyonce did. And Beyonce did, I think, just as well in terms of sales. Yeah. Like, it was the same.
They're colleagues.
And they love each other. Just want to call that out. Okay.
Women can support one another. They're different. Yes. We love both Tay Tay and Beyonce.
Yes.
Okay. Like we love them both.
But let's honor that. Like we could have talked a little bit more about Beyonce like than we did.
Yeah. I mean, this is where racism, even if it's unconscious.
Stop.
You know, like, because they are on equal levels and stop acting like one is not. So, yeah.
And they know it.
They know it. And they support each other.
Although I was talking to a friend and I was like, they're friends. And she was like, are they though?
You know what though? Even if they're not, I love them both because they both do support women.
Yes.
And they know that the media is just trying to get them to fight and they're not buying into it.
And they get what the media wants them to do and they're actively opposing it.
Exactly.
And I love them for it. Yes.
So I'm almost finished here. So now in February of this year, 2024, she, along with her mom, they launched a hair care brand called Sacred with a C. That's C-E-C-R-E-D. On also February 11th, 2024, during the Super Bowl, she released a Verizon commercial that also coincided with the release of two of her singles from her upcoming album.
Yes.
That was rumored to be like a country album. So when she released Renaissance, she said it was is going to be one of three. Like it's going to be a trilogy of like a work that she was creating. So Renaissance was about very dance inspired and very queer, especially and just like, I love dance, just like different versions, different varieties of dance, different genres of dance, house music, but it's just lovely. And it's just queer affirming too. So a lot of her queer fans felt seen and acknowledged, not only seen, but acknowledged directly. Because they're because the queer community is the one that popularized and created dance music as we know in the United States and abroad, basically. So she wanted to honor that along with Uncle Johnny. And so when she released the commercial during the Super Bowl, she also talked about in the commercial, she's releasing music. It's like a fun little thing. You guys go and look up the video. It's really, commercial is really funny. And she released two songs, Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages. So people are like, oh my God, I know it's a country album that's coming. Because again, she's from Houston. Her daddy from Alabama. Her mama from Louisiana. Okay. Yep. Yep. She's country, country,
like,
country.
What did you think? Like,
yes. So she released them. Texas Hold'em became the highest, became her highest chart debut in her career, her 9th solo number one, and her 13th across all credits on the Billboard's Hot 100. On March 12th, so last month, she announced that the second album in the trilogy would be called Cowboy Carter, confirming that it was a country, you know, maybe gospel tinge record, which was released last week on March 29th.
Yes, it was.
And it includes collaborations with Tanner Adele, her daughter Rumi, Miley Cyrus, Tiara Kennedy, Willie Jones, Post Malone, Linda Martell.
Yes, we're thinking the same thoughts again.
Willie Nelson and the Dolly Parton, among others, including Raina Roberts, Shaboozy, and Brittany Spencer. So Cowboy Carter, you guys got to check it out. I love it. Like, listen to it. It's really, and I love how, like, I feel like that trip that she took back in 2010 really, like, open something up in her to, like, really learn about stuff. And she says that, you know, she grew up and she's from Texas, and Texas is very, very country. Anybody in Texas is country, is very, very big. And whether you're Black, Latino, white, everybody country in Texas. Okay. It's just, she grew up going to rodeos. She like country, country stuff. So the fact that they're telling her, oh, she's not country because she's known as a pop and R&B artist. Right. I get it. But her roots are Southern and country. And she wanted to know more about it because she became a nerd. I think that trip turned her into a nerd. And she started seeing the origins of country and also how Black people have always been there, even though, like with your story with Miss Linda Martell, she was kept out of it by the country music establishment, booed, not supported, because they want to also smudge out the contributions of Black people in American music. Black people have influenced every form of Americana that you can think of.
Every single part. Yes.
All the cool stuff. And if it wasn't Black people, it's Jewish people. Let's just be clear.
I was going to say, like, some of our language is from Yiddish.
So but also because people forget, like, America's a melting pot. Like, America's the land of the remix.
Right.
Like,
oh my God. America's the land of the remix.
It's the land of remix, people. So, but that is Beyonce. That is the tip of the iceberg. And I've been listening to Cowboy Carter. Some of my favorites are at Levi Jeans with Post Malone.
Listen, I can't stop listening to the album.
It's so good. And I love the Jolene remake. It's a cover. It's not the same. Because if Beyonce had come out and been like, Jolene, don't take my man, ain't nobody gonna believe that. Come on now. Ain't nobody gonna believe that. She was like, Jolene, you could catch these hands. That's what she's saying.
Blackbird, her version of Blackbird. I mean, I cry. Like, why am I crying? What's happening?
The first song, I love how she opens it and ends it with American Requiem. I just love. I also love that it's sort of like country pop a little bit. And then she shouts out my girl, Patsy Cline. If y'all don't know, y'all need to ask somebody. Miss Dolly Parton, Willie Nelson.
Yes.
I just love it.
So I walked in when Willie Nelson was, he's like, is that Willie Nelson? Yep. I said, yeah. You either listen to the whole album or you walk away. I can't help you.
And, you know, like, Miss Dolly.
I got to work.
I mean, Miss Dolly Parton is we have to cover her one day. But she's a cultural icon. She's a kind, caring woman. She's everything good about the South. It's like, you know, South has a lot of issues. But I love the South. I'm a Southern girl. It's beautiful. There's a lot of cultural richness to the South. Yes. And the South is also very varied, people. It's not one kind of way to be Southern or country.
No, yeah.
So
that's important.
Yep. So that is Beyonce.
Oh, my God.
That wraps up another episode of the episode. Guys, remember to follow us on all the things. And also, please go and leave us a comment and like and leave us a review on Apple. It helps people find us. It's very, very important. We really, really will appreciate it. And like I always say, copy the link for the podcast and send it to your friend. Email it, text it. Don't just tell them about it. Copy the link and send it to them. And you can also support us through Patreon on patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam's going to tell you how else you can support the show.
So listen, you guys, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, Notorious Women Podcast. All of them. Just go to Notorious Women Podcast. Go to Instagram and follow us. We're fun over there.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we
are. And talk to, you can talk to us there, you know, under our, you know, listen, it's DM. Me. I will talk back. I have a problem. DM us if you want to. Don't DM us on TikTok. I don't even know if you can DM on TikTok. You probably can.
I don't know. About TikTok.
So DM me on the Instagram or Lovetta. One of us will find you. Yeah. Also, you can email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. Please talk to us. Let us know what you think. Let us know if there's a woman we're missing. Some of you have done that already. I have written it down. It's in my brain or Lovetta's brain. We don't know. Sometimes it depends who catches it first.
I'm struggling. Send me positive vibes, y'all. And positive healing vibes.
Go on Instagram and tell Lovetta you love her and that she's so pretty. Because she is. And we do love her. That's right. All right.
Like my dog would say. Anyway, on that note, okay, we'll see you next week, guys. Bye-bye.
That's right. Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.